Hey, this week on the Rethink Podcast, I get to sit down with my friend Brad Lominick and have a really great discussion about a lot of different parts of leadership. Full disclosure, though, we bought some new cameras and we're still figuring out the audio, so we're going to ask for a little grace and a little patience. We know the audio sucks, but the content is great. I hope you enjoy it.
Hey, man, we're here today with Brad Lominick. Brad, you're a new friend.
Yeah.
We've known of each other and run in similar, well, I can't even say I run in your circles because I'm like, this guy is like, I just told him before, is like, you're the most famous person I know.
You got to get out more. That's the reality.
Definitely. But first time I hung out was at a retreat a few weeks ago of leaders put on by Convoy of Hope, and you hosted that. And
yeah.
And we talk, and then I know you're friends with Jesse. You work with a lot of young leaders,
yes,
like around the world. And yeah. Jesse's gone to a few of your retreats, and Jesse's been singing your praises for years now, going, you've got to be in a room with Brad. And I'm like, yeah, I'll get to that. But I don't get out much. But we had a conversation on that retreat, and then I did a retreat with you with some, you call it Young Guns.
Young Guns.
Yeah. And well, I want to hear more about that.
Yeah.
I loved it. I loved it.
You were in your element, man. I mean, that was...
I was the second oldest guy in the room, and the other guy was... He knew dinosaurs, I think.
Yeah.
Right? Sure. But, man, I was just... Anyway, so we can talk more about that. But you have this heart and a calling on your life, and I'm going to explain what that means in a minute, to really, like, influence influencers, to be a leader of leaders, and not to lead what they're leading, but to make them better, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I just want to pick your brain for a while. And this might end up being a therapy session.
Well, I think all interviews are.
Yeah.
Actually, or podcast conversations. It's
yeah.
That you get to sit down with people you want to talk to and put a mic in front of you and hit record.
Yeah. So I don't have any agenda except I just want to hear your thoughts around some stuff and what God's been teaching you around the leadership. You just your most recent book is H3 Leadership, and the three H's are humble, hungry, and hustle. And I want to talk about, I'm going to give you a chance to kind of give broad strokes on those. And then I want to maybe take it maybe in a, because I'm sure you've done tons of interviews about, I love hanging out with leaders. I'd like to talk to a leader. I'm not a great reader, but I made that clear ahead of time.
But you are a great content guy.
And, yeah.
Which is actually really interesting, because a lot of people who are really good at content don't necessarily consume content well.
Right.
In book form.
Yeah.
Are you an audio guy, by the way? Do you like audiobooks?
Does Netflix count?
Well, Netflix is another form of intake, for
yeah.
sure. But
yeah, I'm a conversation guy.
Yeah, that's. I find that a lot of people, though, who are really good communicators, aren't actually good. They're not necessarily good readers.
Oh,
and I don't know what the connection is there, but I find that to be true with a lot of people.
Well, the stuff I read, like I'm in a cohort right now through Wheaton. With all these pastors.
You're how many pages behind?
I'm 1,000 pages behind, and it's all due in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And it just makes me want to, like, I think I'll go hiking. I can't
catch up.
Are
you having those dreams at night, though, where it's kind of nightmarish? Because
you don't have your pants on?
You're like late for class, and you haven't turned your paper in, and you're 1,000 pages behind.
That's actually my reality, though. It's not a dream.
Yeah. I just always have those. And I'm like, wait, I'm not in master's. I'm not in a master's level program.
It's just my life. But I love being in the conversations around it. You know,
yeah.
A few weeks ago, you zoomed in and gave basically just a great leadership talk. And a lot of it was based on this to our whole staff. And I looked around the room of all these young leaders, because half our staff is, you know, under 30.
Yeah.
And they're leaning in to what you had to say, and you're not preaching at them, or it doesn't feel like a seminar. It just feels like a conversation about what you've been learning around leadership. So
well, that's, by the way, that's also, I want to thank you, but I want to give credit to two things. One, at Flatirons, there is a culture of hungry, meaning
yeah.
there's a culture that we get better.
Definitely.
And we learn.
Absolutely.
And that, like, you know, that I appreciate the fact that they're leaning in. But I think they lean in regardless of who's on the Zoom call or even in front of them.
Yeah.
And also Jesse was facilitating the conversation in an interview format.
Right.
And I just find anymore, if you're listening to this and you're a communicator, you're a teacher, you're somebody who stands on a stage or you hold the attention of people, that the power of facilitation and of curation and the ability to sort of bring people in an environment where it feels like we're having a conversation, we're sitting at dinner, mm-hmm. we're able to like ping pong back and forth.
Yeah.
I just think that's what people desire.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's because that's the thing we can't necessarily get by watching or consuming content in most outlets.
Right.
So even if you're a pastor, and there's still a place for the word being unpacked and
sure.
and you're discipling people. But I'm just finding more and more when I speak or when I'm teaching or when I'm showing up someplace, I'm doing a lot more Q&A. Mm. A lot more Q&A.
Yeah, and it's not about what should I preach on or what's your take on this scripture, right? So as a pastor, as a leader, okay, I don't really need a lot of coaching around, and I'm not speaking for all, but me, about like how to teach or how to do this, how to do that. That's not what's feels heavy, mm-hmm. all right? You've been working with leaders through Catalyst, which is a great leadership development. You did it for 12 years.
Yeah, even before that, it was when it was unofficial. Yeah. It feels like it was 20 years of my life.
Yeah. Under one of the greatest leaders of all time, John Maxwell,
yes.
who's been a leadership guru. And yeah. so, I mean, you've sat at the feet of, but also stood in front of and influenced thousands of men and women in, across the world in terms of becoming the leader God has meant them to be, right? And then I want to talk about this, all right? Because something prompted you to put to articulate into written form, and then you teach out of this, because this is what we do, right? And here's the guts of it.
Yeah.
Like, here's the three big rocks that have to be in place. Also, around the same time, and this is where you and I have a connection,
yeah.
is...
Well, dysfunction was going on. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like... Yeah. Like you went on sabbatical.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, and I don't know what led up to that or what you had to wrestle through. But the timing of all of this was very, very, very close.
Yeah.
And so you're learning some stuff. And I think this is where maybe, like, I want to turn the cameras and turn this into a therapy session and go like, hey, what were you feeling in that? Because I agree, humble, hungry, and hustle are all big, all right? But if you're not doing well in those areas, right, all you feel is weight, pressure, and panic.
No question.
Right?
And most people, this is true, Jim, like sometimes your greatest things that you can give people a sense of practical advice around are the things that are painful. Yes. And for me, that was true of this, I mean, humble, hungry, hustle. It was a framework for me that I was trying to live out even from my 20s. I didn't have those words, but this sort of three-legged stool. And when interns would come in at Catalyst over the years, and they were the best and brightest, and they're there to they want to know how they get ahead.
Sure.
The first day, and they're like, "All right, just tell me how I succeed here." And I would always say, you gotta be humble, you gotta stay hungry, and you gotta always hustle. Those are kind of our three rules of engagement if you're gonna be part of this team. But it wasn't a book at that point. The reason the book happened though was because I needed to rethink, and we'll use that because it's the podcast name.
Yeah.
But I needed to reestablish like some habits in my own life and in my own leadership.
Yeah.
Because I was getting really stale. About 2013, and I was 12 or 13 years into leading Catalyst, and we were up and to the right. We're crushing it. We're all metrics are successful. We're everything is feeling like it's got momentum.
Yeah.
But I was becoming dysfunctional. I was short with people. I'm a driver, so the driver in me was like really leaving people in the ditch. And the more success, the more pressure. And the more pressure, the more sense of like, okay, now something's going to get squeezed out of me that is actually not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the premise for the sabbatical was I had a friend who was actually from London, a guy named Steve Cochran, who I talk about in the book. And he was not like close to me, but he was close enough. We were having lunch and he said, "I think you're done." I'm like, "What do you mean I'm done?" I'm like, "I think you're done with this season." And I was kind of offended at first.
What was he pointing to?
He was pointing to my leading of the organization.
Okay, but that's going well. He's seeing something, the thing, the exactly. C-carter, the thing beneath the thing, right?
The thing, no
what,
question.
What was he pointing at going, you got all the surface stuff going, what was he pointing
well,
to?
Well, he was pointing to a number of things, but mainly the idea that I was just becoming toxic in general. And I was still getting things done and accomplishing what felt like we needed to accomplish. But, you know, the team was starting to feel like, I don't want to be around him anymore. Mm. Now, everybody on the outside, they still love me. Because they didn't know what was really going on. Mm. Again, because we're successful. And all the speakers who would show up to Catalyst events and all the group leaders that would come and all the people on the outskirts, they were like, oh, Lominick, he's amazing. But the people on the team closest to me inside, they still love me, but they were just like, okay, I'm kind of done with him. And not because I wouldn't take him up the mountain, but, you know, my journey up the mountain with them was a lot of people being left in a ditch.
There's some bodies.
There's some bodies behind. Mm-hmm. And I you know,
Steve, did you know that was going on as it was happening?
Yeah. Did you just, oh, yeah. You know, the box, you know, like, this is what he told me later. Because he really coached me through my sabbatical, along with being the challenger who told me I should at a lunch. He also coached me through it. And he said, you're kind of like that boxer. And I think a lot of leaders are like this. You're the boxer in the ring that you're getting pummeled, but you're never going to throw in the towel.
Right.
The only way you will get taken out of the ring is to be knocked out. And, you know, a lot of us as leaders, we just stay in there until TKO. And the challenge for all of us is, well, am I in the midst of this? And am I actually like, is there something I can do different in the boxing ring to actually like make this a better experience?
Yeah.
And we get on that journey, though, towards just like going to the knockout. And we try harder.
Yeah.
We carry more weight.
Yeah.
We take on more stuff. And that makes us more toxic, and that makes us more dysfunctional. And this is true at every level of leadership.
I agree.
You know.
So I think there's only three ways out of the ring. One is, and I think you chose this, which is, I didn't. You kind of rang the bell and said, I need a timeout.
Yes.
And you said, I must step out of the ring.
Yes. And with some encouragement from other people.
Absolutely.
Yes, I was in control of my ability to do that. Yes. Right.
And there still had to be some fear, because now who am I and what do I do if I don't, I'm the boxer.
Yeah.
Right. So the other thing is,
and by the way, I wasn't the founder. If I would have been the founder of Catalyst, it would have really been hard. It would have been like 10 times harder.
But still necessary.
It was still hard mm-hmm. for me to do that. But even, I mean, founders carry so much more identity that is deeply inside of them when you have to like kind of evaluate or analyze it. Anyway, keep going.
No, I think I see that. I don't still want to minimize what that two guy does.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because as a one guy, I look at my two guy going, man, he carries a lot.
Yeah.
So that I can keep on doing what I'm doing. So I just didn't want to. The other thing is that you self-sabotage and knock yourself out. Right? And I see that happen left and right. It's like death by suicide or suicide by cop.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm just going to pull the trigger and do something stupid.
Yeah.
Because I just need to, right? Get knocked out, because I don't have the strength to just walk out of the ring myself.
Yeah.
And we see that left and right. People get knocked out. The other thing, and this is what happened with me, is I'm just fighting harder and harder and harder. And I had elders, which is a whole other story, who loved me enough, who came and they rang the bell and went, hey, look at me. Come on, we're going to the locker room for a while.
Yeah.
So you can fight again.
Yeah.
And so that was the other thing, is I had some men around me who loved me enough to say, we're going to take a time out. So that you can fight again. Not you're done and you go into retirement. It's so you can fight again. All right? So.
That's a good breakdown, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's. So my heart and your heart is for young leaders out there. All right? And all they're seeing is comparison, and I have to do this, and I have to do this. And like my first years at Flatirons, I felt like this is the story I tell in my head. We were growing leaps and bounds, 22-25% a year for like 10 years. And in my mind, and Harf Powers, he wrote a book called Redemptive Leadership, and he was my coach all the way through it. The dark side of leadership is, I told myself, everybody's hitched themselves to the 22% a year guy, and then it plateaued. And everybody's looking going, hey, we hitched our wagon to you. What's wrong with you? Yeah. And I'm looking in the mirror going, yeah, what's wrong with me? But in a panic, I look back and going, I got you here, right? So I fight harder, right? So I remember sitting in conferences, Catalyst-type conferences, mm-hmm. or whatever brand I grew up in, and I would hear a very successful leader stand in front of a bunch of up-and-comers and say, if I could do it over again, I would go back and I would be God, family, right? And they'd tell me all the things they'd be different. And I just sat there going, and you wouldn't be leading this seminar.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be who you are.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
And so there's this, like, hey, we need to stay humble, we need to stay hungry, and we need to work hard.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's a tension in that.
Always. There's always a tension.
Right? So I know you're right, but I got to work.
Yeah.
I've got to make it.
By the way, this is why the three H's, not that they're like the end all, but you have to have them working together and intention.
And that's good.
Because if I'm a hustler who has no humility, then it's all about me. And I'm just out to get mine. And I have like total scarcity mindset. If I win, you lose. Right? Mm-hmm. If I'm on the other side, if I'm deeply humble and I have the perspective that it's not about me, there's a bigger story here, you know, I'm willing to, you know, to be less so you can be more, but I don't do anything, then that's just as bad.
Yeah.
And that's where you're saying like the, you know, even the Christian who's like, well, my walk with Jesus is on point. But my boss, and let's just assume you're in a corporate setting, mm-hmm. my boss keeps saying, would you just please get that project done that I'm asking you to do? Right. Mm-hmm. And those are always intention. Most of us though, who end up in places of influence, our calibration is always that we're going to drive ourselves into oblivion. Most of the time that is who ends up in places of leadership. It's people who end up in places of power are the people who have a strong, deep, innate ambition in them.
And not a lot of balance.
So you got to figure out where you are on sort of the scale. And that's why self-awareness is so crucial. Because if I'm not willing to be, you know, to lead myself, be self-aware, understand the things that I am going to naturally do. And this is the difference, again, for me, toxic, like, Darb, that was the nickname, by the way, that my team was calling me, like, for a year. When I was really
dysfunctional. I have that in my notes. I'm supposed to call you Darb.
Darb is
Jesse.
Darb is the anti-Brad. He's because it's Brad backwards.
Yeah.
And they called me Darb for, like, a year. And, you know, Darb was he was just a jerk. He was the one that everybody was like, I don't want to be around you. I love you. And Darb gets a lot of stuff done. Mm-hmm. But Darb is just a complete jerk. And we don't need him around here. But I've got to be aware of that. And now if people have permission around me to call me out when I'm sort of doing that, and they kind of slap me back in reality, you know, figuratively, mm-hmm. that's a good thing. And this is where leadership becomes fun, is when we're all bringing our gifts to the table.
Yeah.
And I'm going to sometimes get out of balance with my drive and ambition, but that's where people around me are going to help me see that. They're going to speak truth back into me. They're going to, you know, they're going to move me back to places of health. But the challenge for leaders every time, and you and I both know this because we've been there, is it's lonely at the top.
Yeah.
And you get out there and isolated, and now you're like, nobody understands me, which is actually true. Nobody's carrying the weight I'm carrying, which is actually true. And then we just start doing dumb stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think it's really important to acknowledge that, because it sounds like almost like a martyr. Mm-hmm. But the truth is that when you're the person leading the organization, there's a difference. When I was on staff at a church, it's really easy to armchair quarterback and second guess the guys. This is my first lead pastor gig, and like the moment they said you're hired, I felt this weight come on my shoulders. And it's like, I always tease, like, hey, we have to raise $1 million for that or $3 million for that, and we have to do this for this. And I just finally, I just go, like, wait, time out. What pronoun are you talking about?
We
ain't going to raise a dime.
Yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
I'm going to walk up there and I'm going to cast vision around, and they're going to respond to that. You're the CFO. You're going to manage it.
Yeah.
You're not going to raise it. You know, and it's like, everybody wants insurance. Everybody wants, you know, got a young staff. We're all going to have babies. Who's going to pay for those, all right? Yeah. And the answer is not me. You know what I mean by that. But I think it's really, really important, because here's the other thing that I put language to, but everybody feels. If I do my job as leader of a church, well, but you just really put in any, right? At that celebration party, we hit all our ends or our goals or whatever, you know, you're doing, like, yeah. Who gets all the credit and glory if everything goes great this year at Flatirons? God.
Exactly. Okay? Yeah.
If we're under budget and numbers are down and we had to let some people go and some staff is infighting, blah, 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 who gets the blame? And here's the answer. Not God.
Yeah.
This guy.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm not as much as it used to be, because I think I'm in a healthier place right now. One is that I've let go of a lot of control, you know, and out of before I even knew this book existed, it's like I think I'm doing some of that stuff.
Yeah,
you know. So let's get back to this.
And we're all prone to it. That's the thing.
Everybody. Everybody. So you write this around, all right? Humble is around identity.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Hungry is about drive and vision and calling.
Yeah. Right? And really, like the posture of I'm a lifetime learner.
Okay.
Just this premise that I never arrive. Yeah.
That's good. And then hustle is get stuff done. Right?
Get stuff done. And also that I think the biblical, this is where I would differ with, you know, some of the cultural hustle vernacular, which I agree with some of it. We do have to work hard. We do have to redline in certain seasons. We have to be willing to be faithful. We have to execute, get things done. Like the most valuable team members are the people that when you say, oh, Micah, who sit over here to my left and your right, like, what do we say about Micah? Well, if we give him a project, he's going to make it happen. That is a valuable team member. That's hustle. But it's also like that you have a posture of generosity, that you're a collaborator. You have a sense in your life of margin. So that's where the biblical hustle for me is different than just the cultural hustle. And that's always the thing that people are like, oh, okay, that's interesting, because that's different. I mean, even the idea that, you know, I have to have rhythm. Like a great hustler is somebody who is actually, they're properly putting rhythms into their life. Mm-hmm. It's not about balance per se, but it's more about rhythm.
It's good.
And, you know, that would be in the hustle category. Equally as much as I have to work hard. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, are you willing to crush it at rest and margin and Sabbath and abundance mindset as you are to, like, get the project done?
Yeah, I think that, like, I would say it doesn't matter. So it's God, Robin, family, ministry, okay? All true. But it doesn't matter what's going on in these three. Robin's, I just took care of her so well. I got to walk up 5 steps, turn right, talk to 30,000 people this week.
Yeah.
I got to figure out how to do both.
Yes.
Right? So I don't have time to do, I think Andy said one time, I can juggle 4 balls. If you give me a fifth, I drop all of them.
Yeah.
That's me, right? I can spin a few plates for a while. And I always try to spin more than I can, and I lose them all, right? So one of the disciplines in my life is I'm doing less than I've ever done before. You know? But what I'm doing, I'm fully engaged in.
Yeah.
You know? One of the things that I'm doing more of, this is going to sound like contradiction, is I'm investing in margin. Mm-hmm. And I feel guilty about that sometimes. Like, I have more margin in my life of rest and listening to God and I'm going to say fun.
Yeah.
Because fun fills me up.
Yeah.
Right? And then the benefits of that help all the other balls I'm trying to juggle. Right?
Yes. No question.
And it's like, that doesn't make sense when hustle means driven, obsessed, panic. That's what hustle's meant to me in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, you're constantly busy. You have no time to think. You're always putting out fires. Mm-hmm. And again, a lot of leaders, they put validation in, I'm the fire putter outer. I'm the one that everybody has to call. When it has to, you know, when we got to make a decision or we got to like deal with that issue, that there's something in us that is like, we're proud of that. Like,
we kind of like to be saviors.
We do. Compared to, not that you're not, again, willing to solve problems.
All right.
But that premise that now when I talk to the best leaders in the world and you ask them, like, show me your schedule. A lot of them, like, you look at their calendar and you're like, really? That's it? That's all that's on your calendar? And they're like, yeah, because I know that the greatest value I can bring is thinking and, you know, what you're saying, like the ability for me to have margin in my life. And it's not lazy. A lot of people go, oh, that's just because you don't want to work. No. That's different. And as you go up the ladder of influence, you typically don't think that.
Mm-hmm.
You think I'm going to be more busy. But in fact, the best use of your time is actually to be more intentional about doing the things only you can do.
Yeah.
And
I remember talking to James Henderson, who's one of my spiritual directors, and we were talking about this idea of how many times Jesus, it says in the Gospels, he just withdrew to a lonely place for a time. And right after his cousin's head was cut off and he fed 5,000 people, he put the guys in a boat and said, go. And they're like, but there's still, right? It sounds really, really mean. He goes,
yeah.
There will always be people like this.
Yeah.
Right? But on one of those occasions, he says he went off into a lonely place for a time. And some scholars think that that could have been for several weeks or even a couple months. And he only had 3 years to get it done. And in the middle of that, he says, I'm going to take a breath.
Yeah.
But there's so much to do. But he knew I have to go and or I have nothing really to. And I figured, you know, if he's a creator of the universe, all things hold together through him, and he says, I need a nap.
Yeah.
Then maybe
probably makes sense.
I do too.
And there's a great, you know, this premise of being self-aware, knowing the way you're wired, and then as much as you can, depending on the context of your role or your job or your vocation, is being able to protect the times, especially like during the day,
mm-hmm.
literally during the day, on a daily basis, where you can get the most work done, that is that connects to your skill set. So I thought in my 20s, when I was starting out, that like, wait, if I'm a hustler, I'm supposed to like go and have a breakfast meeting and like 4 meetings in a row every day from 7 to 11 o'clock in the morning, because that proves that I'm doing something. And in fact, no, just the opposite in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got to protect that time because that's the time that I'm best mm-hmm. to work on things that are the hardest, to use my brain, to actually like, you know, create content or whatever it is for any of us. But most of the time we end up giving up to other people the times in our day that are the most valuable for us to be the best expression of ourselves.
Yeah. Why do you think we do that?
Well, most of it's because we just let other people determine our schedule based on meetings or based on like, I'm part of this company, right? And my boss told me I have to come to this like 8 o'clock thing. And I'm not saying don't go to the 8 o'clock thing, but as much as you can, yeah. when you start to be, you get self-aware, then you've got to like appropriately be able to then craft as much as you can the schedule that works best for you.
And Jesse, my XP has helped me change this, but I'm coming from a culture where if it's an important meeting, Jim's there. If it's like of any significance, Jim's there. If it's important to Jim, Jim's there. Okay. So I have had to discipline myself to actually not be in meetings to say my leaders have it.
Yeah.
You know, and it feels like What are they thinking about me? What are they saying about me? What are
Yeah.
I'm getting so much. I'm a morning person. Like, I get up between 3 and 4 every morning. And people look at me and go, like, why? And I'm like, why do you stay up past 9?
Exactly.
You know?
That's your time when you're at your best.
Yeah. Mondays, I don't work. I don't take it off. I work off site. Right? Because, and I go to my cabin, and I'm telling you, I hear from God. And I'm not just sitting at a table writing. I'm walking in the woods. I'm playing with my dogs. I'm building something. And I come back fresh. And now I have something actually, right? And I felt guilty about, I'm the leader. I can, let's just be honest. As a leader, you can say, this is the schedule.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But you're trying to go like, well, what works for everybody else? Except the person that everybody's going, dude, if you're not at your best, then none of us get to be at our best. And so it feels initially selfish, actually is serving, going, I'm not going to be at the meetings right now, so I can do something else. So I actually have something to say. And in business terms, we actually have a product that people actually, is helpful to them, right? And when I started thinking like that.
It's such a new level of maturity as a leader.
Almost 60, it's about time.
Most of us never get there.
Yeah. But all right, so you got there. All right, so I don't know. I'm sorry.
We'll
probably split this into three. Well, here's the thing, okay. I want to talk about pre-sabbatical.
Yeah.
Darb.
Okay.
And then the truths in this book.
Yeah.
And what was not true about Darb in these three areas that is now true? Because this gets really, really practical. There's a young leader out there going, I'm underwater. I'm under panic. When I talk to young leaders, the number one feedback is I'm lonely and I'm making it up as I go.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of time and it's coming out of my family. Those are the top four.
Okay. Yeah.
So talk about like, I was functioning like this when it comes to humility, right? Now, this is my mindset, and this is how I'm living my life. Same thing with hungry and hustle.
Well, on the hustle piece, going back to what we were just talking about, that I thought that I felt guilty if I wasn't there. So that was an immaturity thing that quickly like changed sort of post-sabbatical and a new perspective on leadership.
But it felt noble, didn't it?
Oh, it felt very noble. And I always felt even guilty of, well, I've got to be the point leader who creates culture here. And if I'm here at 6 a.m. and I leave at 6 p.m., then that means everybody else has to. And everybody else will now model what I'm creating. Well, that's dumb. I mean, it's dumb because nobody else thought that except me. They weren't, because I had really smart people who were really high capacity.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't looking at me going, well, Brad, if you leave at 3:30 or you come in at 10, then I'm not, you know, I'm never going to hustle. It was so like immature for me to think that way.
Mm.
But just this mindset now that I've got to release that and I've got to find ways for me to be the best version of myself. And it's you like being able to feel comfortable going to the cabin, mm-hmm. you know? It's any leader like feeling like, well, where do you get things done? Now all the remote work nowadays, like sort of like created a whole new paradigm in that.
Here's a one thing. So like I get up and I go to the gym and that's what I'm thinking. And I have a thought around programming or a weekend service, something like that. I've learned to not text it from the parking lot at 4 because most of the world's asleep.
Yeah.
And they're like, does Jim think if I'm not up at 4 working on church stuff, I'm not a good. I had to let go of that. And I had to tell them, hey, I think I'm inadvertently communicating something to you that's, I'm weird. I get up at 4. Most of the world doesn't.
Yeah.
So don't.
Yeah.
Right?
You don't have to model that after me.
Yeah. Sometimes I think I unintentionally communicated, you have to run at my pace.
Yes.
To be respected by me. And I had to clean some of that up too.
So, practically for me, I was 260 pounds. Darb was chubby and not in health, not healthy like internally and not healthy externally. And I'd always been like in shape and was pretty good about working out. And again, the weight, the pressure, you start thinking, well, I don't have time.
Right.
I don't have time to go to the gym. I don't have time. Well, post sabbatical, Brad lost about 70 pounds.
Yeah.
And still is maintaining a lifestyle that is that the big rock of I would say both exercise, which is just calorie burn and putting that one in first every day, and spiritual discipleship and following Jesus, and not and just being really intentional about those two. Because mm-hmm. again, it was like, I wouldn't say I was distant, but you know, like there was so much in me that was just not healthy. So even the habit of running, and I'm not a runner, but it was like, what's the easiest way for me to burn calories if I travel a lot, which I do?
Right.
Well, take your tennis shoes. Right. You got no excuse now. It's a great way to see cities. I mean, so that's a habit that's been put in place.
Okay, so thing needs the thing, right? What's true now that you know is true? It's always true, but you weren't embracing it. So what is the truth about hustle that's different for you? Before I hustled for this reason, now I work differently for this reason.
I would say that the truest thing now is my hustle primarily is about others. And I think that's...
Okay, that's confusing because it feels like you were living your life to keep everybody happy before.
Well, yeah, but deep down, I wanted to win.
Yeah.
Deep down, I really thought... deep down, I probably said on the surface, hey, I really do care. But I wanted to crush the competition. Mm-hmm. I wanted to prove... And I don't know where that came from, Jim. Like, it was probably something in my childhood. I grew up in a trailer park. Not that we were... I mean, we weren't dirt poor, but... There's something in my past that I always was a kid who was trying to validate that I belonged at the table. Mm-hmm. And I would try to win every award, and there was just something in me. So I think the post-sabbatical sort of appropriate hustler now, it is about other people, but I'm also just, I'm okay with like a single or a double. I don't have to hit home runs every time.
Yeah.
And that's actually so life-giving, because it's not that the pressure's gone. I still feel the pressure to actually like make a difference and impact people, but I also don't feel like it's all up to me. And you know, this is where so many of us as Christian leaders will say, oh well, it's, you know, God's in charge. the results are up to Him. We don't believe that though. We think if we work harder, and you know, so I really do feel like that the release of that doesn't mean I don't work as hard, but it just means for me that I'm okay with the results, even if they don't feel like that they look like I, you know, I'm on the scoreboard.
Okay, so what would you say to a young leader out there who's going, I want that? What question would you have for him or her to look at that they need to answer around that?
To me, the biggest thing is I've got to reverse engineer. If I'm a young leader, and I've got to start with the end in mind, and then start to reverse engineer. Well, what's the steps to get there? Mm-hmm. But it really does start with, am I like dialed in on this sense of identity, calling, and assignment? And that's really important. Because if you don't get your framework right in your early first half of life, especially of career, then you're chasing all these things that are not necessarily going to be the thing that when you get there, you look around and go, okay, this is where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
So when I say identity, calling, and assignment, you know, it's that who you are, it's the why you're here, and it's the what you do. So don't, you know, like I would have put so much weight in my 20s on the what I did.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because that felt like that was the you know, the most important piece. And this is where I get, you know, when I stepped out of running Catalyst, the challenge was, am I okay with not being Catalyst Brad anymore? Because mm-hmm. he got invited to the White House, and he got to go to all the cool things, and but that was I had it incorrectly put in the wrong buckets, because it wasn't identity, it wasn't even calling, it was just simply an assignment.
That's good.
So if I'm a young leader, I've really got to be clear that knowing the difference between the why and the what, and even the who. And one other thing I would say to a young leader is your ability to properly like climb the ladder is probably going to be based off of things that you don't think it's based off of. And here's what I mean by that.
Yeah.
We think we have to give the best answer, but I think the best way to gain credibility is to ask a good question.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I tell my young staff that all the time. I was like, come and ask. I've been doing this long, like teachers. Like that, I don't have a lot of spiritual gifts. I've got some confidence in the Holy Spirit's gifting there, right? And I got young teachers in there out here who go like, I've got a guy out there who's been doing this longer than I've been alive.
Yeah.
But if I go down there and ask him, I'm afraid I'll look incompetent.
Yeah. It's just
and to me, I'd be like, dude, you'd be so wise. It'd be like, if I had Michael Jordan down there, I remember one of my teaching pastors says, I've got like Michael Jordan, Babe Ruth down the hallway. Why am I not asking questions? I'm right. Like, well, I think you're being flattering, but absolutely. Leaders actually respect good questions, right? Yeah.
No question. They respect it. It's
honoring.
It's honoring, and it automatically builds credibility for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here's the thing, you don't have to know the answer. That it's like such a shortcut, it's a hack to instant credibility. Yeah. And especially when you get around, this is what I would always tell people in our team, especially at Catalyst over the years. Like when you get around somebody who you're really intimidated by, what do we naturally think we should do? We naturally think we should validate that I belong here.
Impress them.
Yeah, impress them. No, just the opposite. Pull out the gold in them and ask them a good question.
Yeah.
And honor them by, now you're not brown nosing because we know a brown noser, yeah. You know? And that there's a difference there between a curious, like, I want to learn from you and I honor you because I really do value what you have to say, and somebody who I'm now setting up my answer because I'm asking that question and I'm trying to get them to say, well, what do you think? So I can, you know, return the volley.
So good.
So that's a really important piece for a young leader. And if you're not leading with listening and questions and curiosity and this posture that you're truly like everybody you are around is a classroom, man, that you gotta shift that dial immediately. Because I noticed the people who I respect the most, CEOs, captains of industry, the best leaders in the world, when they walk in a room, they're the grand poobah. And they walk in with like their moleskin out or their phone out. And now they're asking everybody questions around them. You're like, wait, really? Like, yeah. That's still their posture, is I never arrive.
That's good.
By the way, what are you saying to young leaders?
What am I saying to young leaders?
Yeah, like what's at the top of the top of the page for you?
This is a different interview, right?
I like turning the tables.
Oh, I think it's very similar to what you're talking about, and that is one is identity. Like who I am is not this church, who I am is not my marriage, who I am is not the numbers of people showing up, right? All those things, all the nickels and noses and all the things that we've always traditionally going, success equals this. And who I am is not. Like, I grew up poor, too. So, I mean, having money in the bank has always been, right, a statement of, I'm enough if I have stuff like that. And then I actually put that on other people. Like, I make my elders or something like that. Are you honoring me or not? Because put zero, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a value statement based on really, really. And, again, sabbatical stripped all that away from me, you know? My takeaways from sabbatical are is, this place is not my identity. Yeah. I have some ideas what I'm going to do, right? But if they would have said you're done, like most sabbaticals end with pastors, it was really just a nice exit towards the door.
Yeah, it was pre-exit.
Yeah. It was just like, this was not that.
Yeah.
But if it had been that, I can now look back and go, I'm not saying it, I've been like, okay, God, what's next, all right?
Yeah.
I'm not that guy. I mean, it was already rough. but I know my identity is not this. And so when I do, and we're already looking at a succession plan where I won't be the lead pastor of this place, I don't know what I will, I won't be the lead pastor of this place, but I'll be me. And I'm a leader, and I'm a leader of men. And I don't know if you said this in this or what, or the conversation before, but in the training you gave my staff, you asked us to kind of put that calling, like, yeah. What's true?
My statement, the purpose. Yeah.
Right. No matter if you're employed here, or there, or whatever. It is, yeah. I think I exist. Right. My mission, my purpose is to remind people of what Jesus says is true and is still true about them, no matter what's happened to them or what they've done or what's been done to them. Mm. And I'm gonna do that on a stage with millions of dollars of lights and yep. Right. And I'm gonna do that on a porch in a Cracker Barrel rocking chair like this, going, "How are you doing?"
You know. And that's so freeing.
It really is.
It's so freeing to know then that that's your riverbanks. You can take the boat down.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether you're on a speedboat.
Yeah.
Or you're on a life raft, or you know, you're in a cruise ship.
Yeah. I think the other thing is this illusion of control, and it is an illusion. There's nothing in control. I exercise every day. I eat pretty healthy. All that kind of stuff. And at any moment, a cancer cell in my body might say, "I think I'm gonna go crazy," and it's not because I did something wrong, right? You work with people, right? And you think everything is going great, but at any moment you're gonna have that meeting where they come in and go, "Hey, I made a really bad decision, and here we go off to the races," and you have no control over that. You can work your butt off and build a church, and then a virus happens two years and 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and it shuts you down, and it's like you don't get a vote on that, right? There's a lot this illusion of control, and the same thing about moving people's hearts. I thought there was a magic sermon that I could do that would make people stop sinning or give money to or not do this or do more of that, and it's not. All I've been called to do is faithful with the word, and I'm not in control of what happens from here to there. From after it leaves here, that's between them and the Holy Spirit, and their rejection of the word isn't that the rejection of me, and I took it personal for a long time. You know, so it's like... So that control, and at the end of the day, there's really very. I saw this great thing on Instagram. I have some margin in my life, and I just like to do this sometimes in the reels. And this guy says this idea that you need 20 friends. He says in America it's an illusion. You give me three, badass that I can invade a country with, and I'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And just like I think this idea that I need a lot of relationships in my life. I need a few great relationships in my life. The number one is Jesus. The second one is my wife. At the end of the day, Robin, Jesus, and I sitting on a porch going, "I don't care if you're the pastor of the biggest church in the world. I don't care if you can bench press this. I don't care, you know, you're, right? It's just me, Jesus." And so I chose church over Robin way too much. If I choose Robin over church, even if I'm wrong, I can live with that. You know? So, yeah. This is really helpful to me. You're making a huge difference. You know, yeah, when you left Catalyst, you knew you were going to lead leaders.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Did you know what it was going to look like?
I had a fairly good vision for what the next season was.
Yeah.
And part of it for me, even when I left Catalyst, was, and this might be the thing that somebody needs to hear. It's okay if you leave. I'm not saying everybody needs to leave. And you might stay for 40 or 50 years in the same thing you started. You might stay in the same company, same church. So I'm not saying you need to leave. But transitions are good. Mm-hmm. And I needed to leave because, one, I needed to let somebody else lead. Mm-hmm. But, two, I was sort of getting bored. And I needed to, like, again, go do some things that probably were in a different space, that not just, it wasn't just about being challenged, but it was that sense of the race I've run for this decade plus was a good one.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And even feeling the permission to do that was so freeing compared to, well, I'm going to stay here forever and I'm going to, you know, set up on the top of the mountain and not let anybody come up here and see the view.
Yeah.
But when I left, I knew that I was going from, you know, from gathering thousands, tens of thousands, to now like hanging out with tens.
Yeah.
I knew that was the season I was moving to.
Yeah.
I see. Partly because I felt like that was going to be the best use of my impact and my influence and the relationships God had given me for 20 years at that point.
Yeah.
So it was much more like smaller rooms, more, I wouldn't say more important leaders, that's the wrong way to say it, but a different subset of leaders that now, you know, that I'm gathering the ones who gather the thousands compared to before I was just gathering the thousands.
I think you're gathering leaders at a very, and this is orchestrated by the Holy Spirit, so not to over-spiritualize. I think you're meeting with leaders at very important junctures in their life, which will have ripples beyond you.
Yeah, that's true.
And I saw you with those young leaders up there leaning into what you're saying, and they're not going to go back. And they're just taking these nuggets and these just little things like what you just said, the riverbanks.
Yeah.
This is my calling, and whether it's on a speedboat or a riverboat or something, I'm the banks. And it's really, really, really good. Hey, this is like a three podcast
thing. No, we've been.
But no, it's awesome for me. I just love talking. You're so easy to talk to. And so there's a lot of young leaders out there. How can they find out more? I know you have a podcast. Talk about that. Do you have any events coming up? Or how can they find out more about how to get in communities and cohorts of leaders? And what's out there for a young leader? Because I was all by myself for a long time until really recently. And I was just kind of a lone wolf out there. What kind of things and resources are available to young leaders who want to step into and learn more?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, I would encourage, I do a podcast, a weekly podcast. It's called H3 Leadership.
H3 Leadership.
And I usually interview somebody and then I give some recommendations on books and links and resources.
Oh, you just interviewed my friend Sean Johnson down at Red Rocks.
Yeah.
We're going to have him here in a few weeks and it's a great story.
And I'm interviewing, you know, folks that would be well known. I'm interviewing business leaders. It's a broad. So that's one outlet. You know, in terms of like events, I'm not really doing any events that are just open to anybody.
Right.
They're very curated.
Right.
So I would say, hey, like there are some events I'm doing, but I don't, you know, it's because they're invite only.
Sure.
It's a bit hard to, you know, to throw them out there in terms of, is there an invitation available?
Are there leadership events out there that you trust?
Oh, no question. Yeah. I mean, I would say, for me, kind of the top five, if I'm a young leader, especially, you know, I think the Q conference is really good.
Okay.
It's called the Culture Summit now because they've changed the name or they, you know, Q has different expressions in our culture these days.
Yeah.
There's, you know,
we used to be the Me Too church and we don't really have that t-shirt anymore.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, there's some smaller expressions of, church planting gatherings. I mean, the ARC conference, I think is a good one that a lot of young leaders seem to be going to. Orange conference is another good one that a lot of young leaders go to. Thrive conference, those between Q, Thrive, Orange, ARC, and I would say Catalyst really hasn't done any events the last couple of years, but that's still a good outlet, I think, to stay connected to.
Top three leadership books that everybody needs to read, right? Well, everybody needs to read right now that are out there.
Oh, man.
H3 Leadership.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's right.
Give me two more.
I would say I'm gonna think about authors instead of books.
Okay.
But anything Patrick Lencioni writes,
yeah,
I think is a home run, no-brainer, especially around teamwork, culture. I mean, his book, The Ideal Team Player, is actually really similar to mine because he breaks down like this idea of humble, hungry, smart. So that's a really good book. His book, The Advantage, is one of the best books on culture I've ever read. I mean, anything Simon Sinek writes, I'm a big fan of Simon Sinek.
Yeah, absolutely.
Start With Why, Leaders Eat Last. He's got some other ones that have more recently come out. The other folks that I really like Gary Vaynerchuk, and like he's PG-13 R with his language, but he's a guy that
so splatters.
Exactly. You're like yes, but he's been, he wrote a book called Crush It, He just wrote this book, this new book called 12 and a half. And he's actually, he's this brash guy. But what's interesting right now is he's talking about being grateful. And he's talking about like kindness. And he's got a great podcast, the Gary V Audio Experience, which I listen to on a regular basis. So he would be one that probably a lot of people
don't
may
listen
not know.
To that with your children.
Do not. No, seriously. Like if they're in the car, like change the dial. But it's he talks a lot about technology. He talks a lot about the future. He's on NFTs and crypto. But I really like some of the things he says, especially towards the next generation. And I'm always a fan of finding voices that are outside of my world.
Yeah, me too.
Right. So yeah. Whether they love Jesus or not, whether they're like, you know, connected to the church, that I want to always have different people who are speaking into me and helping me just see perspective.
Yeah, I heard Randy Harris, who's criticized because he would look into some different like Eastern mysticism type stuff. And he teaches theology, right? And at the same time, I was reading him a long time. I was reading the thing on Apache religion because I have Native American in my background. And somebody was like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm not shopping for theology. I'm just shopping for best practices. And if I can mine some, like if I can redeem something out of that and go, that in the context of Christ, gold, right? I'm not going to let somebody else hijack it. I'm going to redeem it back.
And my challenge and motivation and encouragement to young leaders, but any leader, is actually do the hard work of curating your own leadership journey. And this is more true today than ever. Meaning, like, don't wait on your organization or on somebody else to actually, like, spearhead your ability to learn.
Yeah.
And truly, like, between podcasts, between some books, between, like, finding mentors. And it doesn't have to be somebody that's meeting with you for breakfast every Tuesday morning in person.
Right.
I mean, it could be somebody who's on YouTube. But we have more than ever the ability to actually create our own MBA.
Yeah.
You just have to do the hard work of finding some outlets that you'll now stay connected to. And the great thing, too, is you can learn in whatever format is best for you.
Right.
Because like we were talking about earlier, you're not a reader. But you can learn from all kinds of people on Instagram or on YouTube. Or you can listen to an audiobook on Audible. Or you can just hang out with them in your on the porch at the cabin. Like, this is such a new world where we have, again, the ability to, like, build our own learning journey.
Yeah.
And,
you know, I say I'm not a good reader, I do, it seems like authors, and this would be an example of that, leadership books that I've read in the past are so that you can, like, dominate and, like, excel and be the boss and make money and be successful and things like that. And then you read like Seneca's Start With Why. I'm just sitting there going, that applies to every area of my life.
So
it's like, I'm not really into leadership books that are going to help me be a bigger boss in a bigger company. I'm not really interested in that at all. Like, you're talking about significance of life, not success by the trappings we've always measured by before. And that's the difference, I think, today.
And you know, as somebody from the publishing world that worked for a pretty big organization that sold a lot of books, like, most authors, if you just read the first chapter, that's where all the gold is.
That's all I need here. That's the best part I heard all day.
I mean, seriously, it is so true. Like, everybody front loads their great stuff, and usually it's all in the first chapter. And then the rest of the chapter, they're just trying to justify
what they said back there.
That the publisher told them they had to have 200 words.
Yeah, that's good. Brad, thanks for taking time to do this.
Oh, this is so much fun, man.
Let's do it again.
I'm in. Anytime.
All right. Thanks, man. Bye. Yeah.